This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. In the 3 weeks leading up to Mitt Romney's thin lead in the Iowa caucuses, his campaign ran an ad narrated by his wife, Anne.
And if you really want to know how a person will operate, look at how they've lived their life. And I think that's why it's so important to understand the character of a person. To me, that makes a huge difference. Maybe some voters it doesn't, but for me, it makes a huge difference.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Character is the currency of political ads and attacks. It makes business deals seductive or unsavory. Character is described in court trials and novels as what makes a person tick. Now to a proposition that human behavior is not driven by character, but context. Sam Summers is associate professor of psychology at Tufts University, who blogs regularly for The Huffington Post and Psychology Today. His research points to the power of the world around us to pull our strings and guide our behavior. Context determines whether we will help someone in need, engage in cruel behavior, even fall in love. And he's on the line to talk with us about his new book, Situations Matter, Understanding How Context Transforms Your World. Welcome, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
Here in New Hampshire, many of us voters consider it very important to look a candidate in the eye, to hear them, to get a measure of their character. So what are the limits of assessing character?
I would argue that character is problematic because it's so context dependent, right? I mean, we know when it comes to politics that the established politician has become quite good at putting forth the type of character or impression that he or she wants to put forth. And so there's certainly that level of it when it comes to politicians. But just more generally, we tend to have this thought that people are driven by stable personality types. In reality, a lot of human nature is much more dependent on the situations in which we find ourselves.
Well, your point is that the world presses our buttons, sort of yanks our chains. Isn't character the kind of compass that steadies us and keeps us on course when situations evolve?
There's some validity to that argument, right? I mean, there is certainly such a thing as personality tendencies. What I'm arguing is that personality as this defining characteristic of how we behave, that's overrated. That it just becomes very easy to read the news story, as you mentioned in the introduction, about the crowd that's not particularly helpful during an emergency, and to write that off as bad apples who are not rising to the occasion, who are dispositionally callous or unhelpful people. The research on the matter, though, makes it pretty clear that there are particular circumstances that would drive all of us, you and me included, to become more or less likely to get involved in situations like that.
Well, let's look at some of that research. You use a few examples of what is now called the bystander effect. Now, this is a term coined after the murder of Kitty Genovese in Kew Gardens in New York, when apparently a lot of people heard her screams and didn't help. More recently, there was the torture and murder of a 2-year-old named James Bulger in Liverpool. 38 witnesses saw this kid being kind of dragged through the streets by his oppressors. Why did they do nothing?
Well, you hear stories like this and they're hard to believe. And in fact, some aspects of the Genovese case turn out to be exaggerations based on the original reporting. But you hear these cases time and time again, and it's really easy to again, recoil in horror at these apathetic individuals. But you have to think about what it's like in an environment like that and how many times we have, as regular, ordinary people, heard screaming outside on a Friday night and written it off and thought that it was loud people, you know, leaving a bar, making a little bit too much noise, or seen the domestic dispute in a parking lot and decided, well, that's between people and they have it under control and I don't need to get involved. When we're in a crowd, we're actually less likely to notice what's happening, we're less likely to interpret it as an emergency, and we're less likely to assume personal responsibility to act. It's the same in non-emergencies. When you're sitting in the movie theater and the film goes out of focus, you sort of hope someone else is going to rise to the occasion and deal with it so you don't have to miss any of the movie. Similar kinds of processes are at play there.
What about going beyond the apathy of doing nothing and looking at what happened at Abu Ghraib, for example? You know, this whole one bad apple theory that was purported. What's your thought on it?
Right. I mean, there's the flip side of being in a crowd, right? Is that sometimes in a crowd, we go along with behavior and do things we might not otherwise do. The story that we all heard about Abu Ghraib was this bad apple story of a couple of individuals. Lindy England was one of them, who was supposedly sort of this monster who was enjoying this sadistic treatment of these prisoners. And we had the photographs that document it. you look into her personality descriptions, her previous experiences and behavior in life, there's nothing that out of the ordinary about it. In fact, at one point she had been a whistleblower at one of her old jobs and sort of gone against the grain and stood up for what she thought were unfair practices at that workplace. And so she's not a sadistic personality type by any revisitation of her past. A lot of what seems to have gone on in that instance was this culture where there was an acceptance of certain techniques being used, and perhaps some people with some what sadistic personality types involved, but when you look at historical examples of torture or bad treatment, you quite often come away surprised at just how normal the perpetrators turn out to be.
Sam Summers is with us to talk about his book, Situations Matter. He's professor and researcher of social psychology at Tufts University. Okay, so reading a book like this, will this make us better humans, more likely to act in the proper way?
It could, but I go to great pains to point out that it's not a self-help book. You know, there's not a lot of chicken soup and soul business going on here. It's really not about making you a better person so much as making you a more effective person is the argument I make. That by getting a sense of how human nature really works and the ways in which, as you suggested, the world pushes our buttons and pulls our strings, we get better at predicting how people are going to behave. We get better at understanding where other people are coming from, and we can use that to become more engaged in an emergency, sure. We can also use that to our advantage at the workplace, in our relationships, and otherwise.
So what kind of things are we supposed to notice about a situation that might help us act more effectively?
Well, number one, just not to jump to these conclusions about personality type. We tend to view the people in our social universe quite often the way we view sitcom characters on TV shows, as these consistent personalities that are going to behave the same way predictably across different contexts. And in reality, while we tend to encounter people in similar contexts over and over again, our physician at the doctor's office or our teacher in the classroom, we have to step back and realize that this might not be all they have to offer, that in different contexts and different environments, they may very well behave in different ways. When you sort of write off the customer service representative as being a malevolent and nefarious individual intent on ruining your day, things go badly. When you take a step back and don't jump to those emotional conclusions, you have a better ability to suss out what's going on in this context and how you might succeed in it.
So you think we kind of stumble through life not really looking at the context around us?
I think we look right past it. I think it's hidden in plain sight, right in front of our eyes. It's so much more reassuring and comforting to think about people in terms of predictable personality types. It makes the world a more manageable and less random place. But I think it's there right in front of us, and we just don't see it. And that's the argument that I make in the book, is that learning about these issues is a lot like learning the trick to a magic illusion, or to knowing the end to a mystery or a movie that you're watching. When you go back and see it again, it's hard to see it through those eyes that you once viewed it through. And that's the argument I'm making for our social universe as well, that when we grasp the extent to which content makes a difference, you start to see everything around you in a much different light.
Well, you bust through some romantic illusions as well. Your chapter on love argues that this ideal of the one perfect match is wrong.
Yeah, my wife hates that chapter.
I bet she does.
But I want to suggest that it's actually not as depressing a sentiment as it might seem. My argument is not that love doesn't exist, and certainly it can be a very spiritual and mystical experience for people, but that, right, this idea that there's just one person, that one perfect personality type, needle in a haystack, Mr. or Mrs. Right, that's clearly not the case. I mean, when you look at the reality of romantic attraction and relationships, people tend to wind up, for the most part, with people who grew up in or live in or work in a physically proximate environment to them. You know, geography plays a big role in attraction, and a variety of other mundane factors and it's actually a good thing. It's actually liberating in the sense that our hearts are very flexible. There are a wide range of options out there that, in the right circumstances, we can be drawn to and then develop a very meaningful relationship with.
How about in the online arena, Sam? You know, we know people behave differently online in the real world. What does that context allow?
Sure. Well, in the online environment, right, it's often an anonymous one. And certainly in an anonymous environment, or one in which you can have an identity but sort of make it up, that affords you liberty that you don't always have in real-world interaction. I think that's why it is so appealing to a lot of people. It's also why, anytime you open up a comment board to anonymous comments or a newly released book to anonymous reviews, you don't know what you're going to get, because suddenly these these normative guidelines that govern our behavior and in day-to-day interaction, they disappear. They melt away when you realize that you're less accountable and can sort of create the own your own context for yourself the way you'd like it to be.
As a social psychologist, do you think people seek out situations like that, contexts where different rules of behavior apply?
I think some people do. I think a lot of people do. I think the appeal for a lot of online gaming, for a lot of just online activity in general, it's always been the appeal of, you know, the costume ball and Halloween in some respects as well. And people do behave very differently in those situations where they feel more anonymous and they feel as if they, you know, the normal conventions that govern their behavior aren't really there.
I'm interested in this idea of effectiveness. You cite the example of a pseudonymous intelligence officer named Matthew Alexander. He wrote a book saying that U.S. interrogators weren't successful early in the war in Iraq because they operated under this assumption that all their suspects were incorrigible terrorists who'd only respond to domination. So your idea is that begin to see them more as humans. So, you know, is this all just a means to an end for you to get your way?
Well, there is a component to that. I mean, you know who's great at recognizing the power of situations? Salespeople. I mean, the guy at the gym who convinces you that there's a one-day special and there's one spot available, and if you take it now, you're going to save money over everybody else. He's pulling those strings to make that a much more appealing option to you and to not let you get out of the room. And I'm not suggesting that salespeople are bad people by any means, but there is certainly that ability to, when you recognize what's going on and what's pushing people's buttons, what's pulling their strings, to sort of yank a little bit and pull them in the directions that you want them to. So while understanding the power of context can make us, quote-unquote, better people by realizing, hey, if I don't do something about this situation or look into it to see if it's an emergency, no one will, it can also make us more effective in terms of manipulating people the way you want them to go or resisting that manipulation from them.
I'll remember that at the gym today. Thanks so much, Sam.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Sam Summers, professor and researcher of social psychology at Tufts University. You may have heard about his research on Good Morning America or NPR or read about it in Harper's or The Washington Post, but Situations Matter is indeed his first book. You'll find links to more in the book, including a trailer narrated by Sam at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow Our Situation on Facebook and Twitter. Stay with us for the electrified roads now being tested in Utah. That's when Word of Mouth continues on NHPR.